Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Kids safe, mother approved. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
It's time for Bookworm. This is the show for avid readers and those that should be avid readers on the Voice America Kids channel. Now, here's your host.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is Bookworm. Welcome to the program. This is on Voice America Kids Network. I'm Chris Froelich here, and our topic today is books. Yes, everyone, books. Who doesn't love books? I love books, honestly. I mean, who can't? There's always a TV, television, but, you know, that doesn't always give you the whole story. I mean, you've always watched a movie, and you just kind of think, wow. If you've had read the book before, then the movie's just kind of like, not really great. So, obviously, books are a great topic to go through. So, today we're going to be talking about four books that I personally just loved, absolutely adored. And since I adore you, my adoring fans, of course, I'm going to share them with you. The four books today that I have with me are... well, not really adventure or comical books. They're more of a serious, mainly a future type of book that talks about how the future will play out and things that go about that. The four books are actually called Relic, Ender's Shadow, Ender's Game. Both of books are not prequels or sequels, but you might want to read Ender's Game first to really understand that, but later in the show we'll definitely get into that. And the last of which is House of the Scorpion. My show is Bookworm. Each week I'll be talking about books. So the first book, as I mentioned before, is Relic. Now, as previously said, this book is more of a sci-fi horror book. You know, not one of those, well, I've learned a lesson and I feel a little happy about it. No. This is a pretty, I won't say gruesome, but it is a very graphic book. But everyone will love it. I recommend it for everyone. There's nothing wrong with the book. I've read it myself. I'm 16, and I've absolutely just found it fantastic. My mother's read the book, and she loves it too. So, you know, my mom wouldn't let me read anything terrible. So, this is a book called Relic by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. Two wonderful authors. The Relic is a horror slash kind of drama adventure book, as said before, which takes place from South America into the multi-level maze of the Museum of Natural History in New York City. If you like an intriguing suspense and plot twisting book, this is definitely one for you. Fun fact: while we're here, I had no idea. I don't know about you guys, but I used to live in New Jersey, and I used to go to the Museum of Natural History consistently, almost as much as I possibly could as a child, because I loved it. And I never knew that regular people only see about 10 to 20% of the museum, when 80 to 90% of the museum is all devoted to research, research and development, the people who work there, and just storage. They keep every single artifact that they have since, like, I don't know, like 1945 or whenever it was opened. I don't recall, but yeah, it's a really fantastic thing. It's a maze, and there's like 20 levels of just relics and most ridiculous things that you couldn't possibly imagine until you read this book. So it is a great find. But let me continue. The book opens with John Whitney, an anthropologist, studying a newly discovered tribe in South America. I mean, who doesn't, really, as an anthropologist? But anyway, as part of his research, he gains the trust of a tribe and joins them for a spiritual gathering. He agrees to drink a soup made for him by the tribesmen. Dr. Whitney sends several crates back to the Museum of Natural History with his journal and a letter explaining that when he returns, he has a new revelation that will change how scientists have addressed superstitions in tribal lore. Sounds pretty crazy, right? I don't know what he's been smoking, but it's just kind of ridiculous. But no, really, the tribesmen actually give him a certain type of potion. I wouldn't say a hallucinogen, but it makes him see things more clearly, and they explain to him the secrets to all superstitious creatures, and later in the book you find out that they're not as superstitious as you might think. 6 weeks later, the crates arrive in New York City with both Dr. Whitney and his crew missing. No one knows. And actually, in the beginning of the novel, you find out where they go, how they are missing, and what kind of intriguing ways that they've gone missing. I don't want to say die to ruin the book for you, but hint, hint, wink, wink, that does add up. New York City and homicide detective D. Agosta, is assigned to investigate the ship. They believe the crew's disappearance is mainly drug-related, and of course you would think overseas stuff, drug-related, but not at all. But D'Agosta opens the bile hatch and finds dozens of bodies and severed heads inside. Pretty gross stuff. I mean, if I were him, I would freak out. I don't even know if I couldn't be a police officer, because things like that would freak me out. I when I see blood, I start to just get those little, like, creepy crawlies on my arms, and I don't know about you guys, but blood and me just don't add up. You're listening to the Voice America Kids Start Network. I'm Christopher Froelich here, and our topic today is books. Yes, books. Who doesn't love books? All right, currently now I'm describing Relic, a wonderful novel by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. I've just described the Relic has a horror-slash-drama-adventure book and gotten to the first part, maybe about, I'd say about three chapters in of a discussion about how the book goes. I mean, it's not a long book, but it's a good 500 pages, which just makes it a wonderful read. And it'll be one of those books where it's a great book, so then you'll just fly right through it, kind of like the Da Vinci Code if you're a Da Vinci fan, but this isn't really like the Da Vinci Code, but let me continue on. Dr. Margot Green, an evolutionary biologist, arrives and work at the Museum of Natural History, which is planning a Galaga opening of the latest Superstition exhibition. Now, I would love to see one of these things. I remember the last time that I was in New York, I saw the, what's his name? The guy who did The Night Before Christmas, Tim Burton. There we go. Tim Burton just came to me. I saw the Tim Burton Museum, and man, that guy is, while he is a genius, some of the things that I've just seen crawl into his mind are just absolutely mind-boggling. I couldn't imagine anything more darker and more, I don't want to say sketchy, but just pure edginess, really. It's a great museum, and I thought it was the most magnificent, but wow, a Superstition Museum would be pretty awesome if they actually had it, but let me continue. She and her mentor, Dr. Frock, examine the Whitney crates which are curiously empty, except for the beads and leaves used by packing materials and stone statue of the Cathaga, a mythical forest monster. Noticing a strange fungus growing on some of the leaves, Marco decides to save some for analysis. What that doesn't tell you in this little summary is that while she's opening these crates, she's doing a research project under Dr. Frock, mainly a mentor, really, her mentor, and he was a specialist, and he got much of credit for a lot of his work in the biological designs and biological mapping and things like DNA mapping, but he recently, over the course of about 3 years, had lost his, reputation, actually, lost his reputation as a scientist for his crazy evolutionary biological theories on how some species genetically change themselves faster and faster as time goes on to adapt, and sometimes go into extremes. So having one to two species that evolve from each other and then mutate together and become one super species trying to dominate the world. But when that species dominates the world, it can't feed off of anything else, so then it goes into dormancy, and it just falls asleep and doesn't return until a long time ago, and that's what his theory was, and people thought it were absolutely ridiculous. And the only type of evidence that he had to this was just a footprint of some species that has never been discovered and was too big or too small, let me put it this way, it very well ties in quite well with the book, and he's a great guy. Margot, on the other hand, is just getting out of this whole problem with her father who died, and she's in a really tough place, and you see that throughout the novel, that she kind of tries to wean herself out of it, but she's really getting better at it, and later in the book you realize that she kind of gets over it, and that it helps out. So, as I was saying, Dr. Argo, an evolutionary biologist, and this night security guard is gruesomely murdered the same manner the other scientists that had gone missing have been killed. And as the ship's crew, D'Agosta investigates the murders and puzzles over a possible connection. Since he believes the killer may still be inside the museum, he orders almost every single layer. Now, remember when I said this in the beginning, there's almost 20 levels in the entire museum, so he completely cuts all of that off. So the police finish, since he believes that the killer must be still in the museum, he orders it to be closed until the police have finished searching, despite the protests of the director and about the upcoming exhibit. Marco analyzes the fungus and finds that it is loaded with a concentrated hormone found in several animal species. Opening the container of leaves, she finds a beetle that has crawled inside what she remembered crawled inside earlier when she previously had checked the crates, and the secondly time that it had touched the fungus and within minutes had grown to a freakishly large size, about the size of, I don't know, like a Dr. Pepper bottle? Yeah, a small little beetle about the size of, I don't know, your fingernail to a Dr. Pepper bottle. The autopsy of the guard reveals a bizarre fact that the killer tore open the skull and extracted the hypothalamus from his brain. The examination of the bodies from the ship reveals the same connection. No one can figure out the connection, and the conclusion is that the killer may not be human, with a claw sample that they get from the brain matter. Notwithstanding that there is something killing people in the museum decides to move ahead in grand opening of the superstition exhibit. Next is a beat-the-clock to attempt for Margo and the other anthropologists to find out who and is what is being strange and increasing the number of murders in the museum, and these murders have anything to do with Dr. Whitney's groundbreaking discovery in South America. So it's a fantastic book. The book is Relic. I think you all should read it. Don't ever stop reading. It's a great stuff. So let's take a break. I'm Christopher Froelich. Keep it right here. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
Stay connected.
Sign up for our newsletter.
Go beyond your favorite Voice America shows. Visit iradioblog.com. Kids these days are so connected to the media that they can't help but be surrounded by news and politics. Today's kids get more information than kids of past generations, and because of that, they have more informed opinions. Kids today may not be able to vote yet, but they can certainly influence voters and issues with their voices. Tune in every week for America Today and talk about the issues and influence the decision makers. America Today airs every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Kids channel.
Now there's a new destination for video content, VoiceAmerica.tv, just like our radio channels and so much more. Voice America Variety, Health and Wellness, Business, Sports, Green Talk, Power Up Motorsports, and Seventh Wave Network now have their own video channel components. Plus, check out exclusive programming, including movies, music, educational courses, science and history, current events, and short features. High-definition, premier-quality programs available 24/7. VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Behind the Line is all about the inside of sports from a kid's point of view. This is a look at all of the action from behind the line. Join your host every Wednesday at 3 p.m., whether you're a kid or was a kid at some time in your life. We'll run down all of the scores, talk about the games of the past week, and preview what's coming up in the next week. You'll want to take notes because this is good stuff. The place to be Wednesdays at 3, that's 6 p.m. Eastern, is the Voice America Kids channel for Behind the Line. Want to laugh yourself silly over the crazy happenings of the celeb world and beyond? Tune in to Behind the Mask on Voice America Kids. Your hosts will uncover the celebrities you know and love, along with some that you might not know in this country, but they are admired across the world. But it's not just the famous that need to look out. We'll look inside the music biz, stage, and of course, the big screen. Listen to Behind the Mask every Thursday at 8 p.m. on Broadway and 5 p.m. Hollywood side on the Voice America Kids channel.
You're listening to Voice America Kids, now with 33% more active ingredients and no artificial coloring.
Put that book down and listen. You're tuned in to Bookworm on Voice America Kids. Now back to our show.
Thank you, thank you. Welcome to Bookworm. I'm Christopher Froelich on the program of Voice America Kids Network. Our topic today is books, everyone. Who doesn't love to curl up with a nice book, maybe with a Dr. Pepper, with all wonderful 23 flavors? Oh, God, I love you. But anyway, I mean, I'm a Coke fan, too. Don't get me wrong, guys, but I am surely not a Pepsi guy. I mean, I heard a funny thing, actually, on Facebook, but that's besides the point. I'm sorry. I'm rambling. But anyway, the books today that we were talking about are four books. We now actually just talked about the other two. The other two were Relic and Ender's Game. Ender's Game, you might want to listen to that broadcast before you listen to this one, of course, because that one is not the prequel, or it's kind of one of those books that this book actually begins and ends while the other book is taking place. It's terrific, actually. I can't express that enough, really. While this kid is growing up, Ender is also going through his whole situations and everything, and you'll hear about it too. Ender's Shadow is by Orson Scott Card. Again, fantastic author, read a lot of his books. He also has a couple of other ones coming out. Not coming out, but already out, and you should definitely go buy them. Buy them all. Buy them all. Buy all, like, 3,600 pages worth of books, and seriously, you will thank me. Don't read them more than 5 or 6 times, and you'll start to read into them much, and then you'll become a little off. But, you know, it's a great read. Ender's Shadow is a companion story to the previous review of Ender's Game, as I said before. This book follows the life of Bean, one of Ender's most loyal and devoted members of his battle team. Yeah, to recap on Ender's Game, just so those of you who haven't actually listened to my last broadcast, which shame on you, you should have, because I'm awesome, and it was a great broadcast here. But, Ender is a wonderful character. He's a smart little boy. If you've ever read the Halo series, you know how Master Chief was, as a child, he was abducted, and he was sent into the military for years, right, as, like, 5 or 6, and they trained him from the ground up over a course of 5 or 6 years. Not 5 or 6. Well, for him, it was more like 20 years. But for Ender, it only takes about 5 because he's so smart and logical and just great. I'll describe it. Then he goes through life learning all these battle strategies in this battle school, and he also meets Bean. Bean is this little boy, and he becomes one of Ender's best friends. At the beginning, they don't like each other, but... And through the end, they become best friends. And of course, how every other novel goes, that's as well as should happen. So, his most loyal, devoted members of the battle team. Bean is a genetically altered child with exceptional abilities and intelligence. He follows Ender's throughout battle school, knowing that he is better than Ender, but lacks the leadership qualities and skills to keep a team together. So even though Ender is a was a pure human. Bean, on the other hand, was a genetically altered human, which you find out later in the book, so sorry for all of you who hate people who are spoilers. If you've listened to me with the Relic, again, I spoiled it a little bit, but you will forgive me later on because you'll love the book so much, and that there's so many plots, twists, and turns. One little spoil isn't going to ruin the entire souffle. He follows Ender through the whole battle school. Bean's past was just about a dodge half-bullet away from death. His past was a battle just to even survive, so, kind of like a lot of those movies, I can't remember, like Boys in the Hood and things like that, that's really kind of how Bean grew up. When he was a kid, he doesn't even recall, he just remembers a white room with a bunch of little kids, and all of a sudden they started killing the kids off, because it turns out it was illegal at the time to do genetic research on kids, making clones and everything like that, as in right now, you can't clone a person. I mean, we probably could do it, maybe, I bet someone's done it already, but technically it's illegal in the U.S., but we cloned Dolly, she's a lamb, so it was pretty awesome, but anyway, so he started killing off the babies, and he was a smart enough baby just to be like, oh, I gotta go, so he goes hides for about 5 or 6 days without food or water, and these people just, like, once they're gone, the police take in the room, and the police come in, and they take over the whole place. And they go, oh, well, this will be a nice office place. So they send office people there, and they get the whole office thing to go. And one of the office people finds him, and then he runs away from the office people. And then he just lives his life on the streets, you know, being an OG and everything. And he's probably the most magnificent little kid. He's like 5 or 6, and he already knows how to handle people, manipulate them, being able to go in the lines using bullies. You'll find out there that bullies are these kids that are a lot larger, but they're still homeless as well, and that they have a tag team of little kids that follow them everywhere. Now, bullies are those kids that can, like, go around, beat up a kid, take his stuff, then run away and not be caught, or just basically bigger kids. They call anyone who's bigger between the ages of, like, 22 to about 6, like, 12, bullies. So, Bean's past was just to survive. He literally had to survive on anything. Like, at one point, he's happy just to get some saltines in his mouth. He first appeared on the streets of Rotterdam, a tiny child with a mind leagues beyond anyone else's. He knows he couldn't survive just through pure strength, hence the name Bean. He actually gets that from this one girl that he used to, I don't want to say crush on, but really, really, really liked, and she meets an unfortunate demise, really, because of how she doesn't listen to Bean. Bean is always right. Let me emphasize that. Bean is always right. Kind of like your parents, Bean is always right, so... You're listening here to Voice America Kids Start Network. I'm Christopher Froelich, and our topic today is Ender's Shadow, a book. Yes, a book, everyone, by Orton Scott Card. I've just gone over probably the first chapter, because I love it. The first chapter is really cool. It's kind of like the life of 50 Cent, only for Bean, genetically altered little kid. But anyway, Rotterdam is a terrible city. You know, look this city up. Since I used to live in New Jersey, look up the, what was it called? Camden. Yeah, like a city like Camden. And that's how he lives. So, he used his tactical genius to gain acceptance in the children's gangs. Yeah, kids had gangs in there. They had kid gangs. Kid gangs, and then they help him make a gang and a template for success for all others. He civilizes them, he civilizes the gang, and live to grow older. So basically, he just gets people to do what he wants, which makes him live longer. And by the end of the book, you find that's why somebody picks him up. This lady starts to teach him. Like, literally just teach him math, science, realizes he's great. So sends him into battle school, which is one of the most prestigious schools in the world, but people don't realize that they don't get to see their kids anymore. But since Bing doesn't have any parents, being genetically altered, who cares, right? But Bean's desperate struggle to live and his success brought him to the attention of the battle school's recruiters. Those people of scouring planets for leaders, technicians, generals to save Earth from the threat of the alien invasion. Bean was sent into orbit into battle school, and there he met Ender. Ender, once again, great guy. Bean's past, well, Bean throughout the novel, really, I'm going to diagnose Bean, is kind of one of those short kids with a Napoleon complex, really. Like one of the kids I know at my school is these short little kid with blonde hair with these huge gauges and just walks around thinking like he knows what he's doing. Napoleon complex, you know what I mean? So he goes around battle school thinking, like, he doesn't think that he knows everything, but he goes around school and he basically thinks that he's pretty awesome. Yeah, he goes around, he knows everything, really. And while he's going around the school, he just surpasses everyone in intelligence. He's even smarter than Ender. Yeah, I know. I've said before, Ender is just brilliant. But Bean's better. I mean, he's genetically altered, which is kind of unfair to him, to Ender's, but he lacks the ability of everything else. Bean goes throughout the school. Actually, one of his old-time bullies that he used to use to help him protect him from other people is then meets him there. And Bean tries to get him to be caught because he thinks that his bully actually murdered someone. And he tries to manipulate the bully to get them to talk and make sure that he doesn't hurt Ender, because the bully might actually hurt Ender. Also, Bean becomes one of Ender's... When Ender goes to command school, and you don't talk about it at all, but Bean is actually separated from Ender in the book. So for a while, all you hear about is Ender, and then the Bean pops up in this book, and then they all go to command school together. So after command school, they both... Well, not after command school, because during command school, he becomes one of Ender's great general leaders. Yeah, cool, right? And he plays the video games just like Ender plays the video games, and he does all this great stuff. Helps Ender do what he needs to do there. They do some great stuff. They also meet Petra, one of the wonderful girls that I want to say that Ender kind of has a crush on, but Ender's really just not into anyone other than he misses his sister, basically, but not in that weird way, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's a great book. Let's take a break. I'm Christopher Froley. Keep it right here. You're listening to Voice America Kids. We just talked about Ender's Shadow and the Orson Scott Card. It's been a great time talking to you. I'll see you soon.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Do you believe in the supernatural? Well, some do and some don't, which is why Beyond the Third Dimension looks at both sides. You have one host who believes in ghosts, while the other can't think of anything more ridiculous. Put them together and you get some great discussion and some real discoveries and exploration of the paranormal, and then some. Tune in to Beyond the Third Dimension, airing Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Kids. And try not to be afraid of things that go bump in the night.
Follow the Voice America Talk Radio Network on Twitter. We're at Voice America TRN. You'll get the latest fix on what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and general happenings that you should know about at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Now you don't have to miss anything when you're away from your home or office. Just go to twitter.com/Voice America TRN or follow along with us at Voice America TRN, the Voice America Talk Radio Network. We're on the cutting edge of social media.
Can you keep up?
Kids face very tough and very real issues every single day. It can be bad.
it can be ugly. Now there's something good that can help. Tune in to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly on the Voice America Kids channel. We'll discuss the issues and provide solutions and connections to solutions that you will be able to use. Our show goes right to the heart of today's kids and beyond. Your parents will probably want to listen in too. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly airs Mondays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 Eastern on Voice America Kids. You just love your pets. But sometimes they can get to be a handful. And just when you think you have them under control, that's when things get, well, crazy. For help, tune in to Paws Around the World. You'll get the inside secrets on keeping your pet the friend it's supposed to be, along with stories to keep you warm and fuzzy. Listen Fridays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Kids.
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
Put that book down and listen. You're tuned in to Bookworm on Voice America Kids. Now back to our show.
And thank you. Welcome to the program Bookworm on Voice America Kids Network. I'm Christopher Froelich here, and our topic today is books. Now, just previously we talked about the first book, Relic, which is a fantastic book by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child, both of which are fantastic authors. I'll go back into it maybe a little later, but right now we have a second book to talk about. This book is called Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card. Orson Scott Card is another just wonderful author. I can't really say anything bad about all the authors that I'm about to talk about, but he's a pretty fantastic, great imagery, great use of everything, I gotta be honest with you. This book is just, I read this book twice. I've never read a book more than once, I'll tell you that right now. I'm not one of those people that just go, I love the book so much, I read it once or twice or three times or six times. No, that just doesn't appeal to me. That's like watching a movie 10 or 12 times. I can watch a movie three times. Like, I can watch Spy Kids 3D with my little brother who's 10 right now, and I can watch Spy Kids 3D four, maybe five times, but when you start going to six, that's a little ridiculous. And a book is kind of like two movies in one, almost. You know what I mean? It takes days to finish a book, or maybe a couple hours, but it's a lot longer than a movie of 2 hours. But anyway, I'm off on a tangent, but the book is called Ender's Game. Ender's Game is a science fiction novel. Yes, another science fiction novel, but this one's not more of a suspense novel. This is more of a science fiction action novel, okay? It is a... Again, fantastic book. The novel is a fiction novel by American author Orson Scott Card. This is set in Earth's future, another Earth's future. Now, Relic wasn't in Earth's future, but this one is more of a what could happen, maybe. It's really more of a science fiction novel. Anyway, so set in the Earth's future, the novel presents an imperiled humankind. So that basically means that the humankind is basically pretty much like a 2012 almost, and who have barely survived two conflicts with the Formax. It is a new species that have just invaded Earth, an insecticide alien race known as the Buggers. Yeah, they call them Buggers. That is their derogatory term for... Well, it's a new derogatory term, actually, in the whole book. You'll start seeing that when the term used as Buggers to describe anyone in the entire human race or to describe anything is some derogatory time. It's probably the equivalent of, I don't know, your seven deadly curse words or whatever you want to call them. But yeah, it's not the greatest word in the whole novel, but... Hey, it doesn't bother us. So, anyway, in preparation for the anticipated third invasion. Yes, third invasion, everyone. Third invasion. It's not like we didn't learn the first time. Oh, wow, okay, so we need to build up. So let's make some new weapons or maybe steal their weapons and we'll do it. No, the second time they invade. Okay, maybe we've learned our lesson. All right, okay, those weapons didn't do jack against these Buggers over here. Okay, all right. Oh, third time. Maybe we have... finally gotten to the source of, we should probably do something about it. But, you'll read out through the novel the real reason why they're having so many problems with this. In preparation for the anticipated third invasion, an international fleet maintains a school to find and train future fleet commanders. The world's most talented children, including the novel's main character, Andrew Wiggum, are taking at a very young age to train in the center known as Battle School. There, teachers will train them in the arts of war through increasingly difficult games, including ones undertaking in zero gravity, what they've mastered with their new things called battle rooms, where Ender, a nickname given to him by his older sister, is revealed as a genius. Now, in the beginning of the book, you see Ender as a 5-year-old child, who has this thing called a monitor. Now, a monitor is an implant into the brain where people, people who are assigned by the federal government watch this boy through his eyes. Yes. The monitor goes into his eyes, well, back of the brain, and then views through his eyes what's going on. So no one can do anything to him. And actually, he keeps his monitor longer than most kids actually are supposed to keep his monitor. So no one can mess with him. And he gets picked on afterwards, and he gets his monitor taken out, and they all mess with him, and they call him terrible names. His sister is a wonderful young girl, and you'll read out through the book. She'll play a very, very large role in how Ender's emotions and how he copes with them and what drives him to be good. Now, his brother, on the other hand, he is one of three. Now, in this book, this is to a point of where the Earth's population has gotten so large that we have to limit the amount of children that we have, like China used to do. He's a third, and he's not supposed to be. But since the government is using that family to make geniuses, military use, they thought the third one would work. His first and his eldest brother was too violent, too disruptive, too cruel to become a soldier of any kind. Too sadistic of a genius. His sister, on the other hand, was too pure, too nice. She only manipulated people. She couldn't use anything. She couldn't be violent. She couldn't hit, but she could use mind games. Now, they thought, okay, maybe the third one will actually use all three together, and he'll be the brilliant of the other two. And, you know, well, they were correct. But anyway, and the zero gravity, actually, in the battle rooms are basically a cylindrical room. And this room, you come out of a door, and you can't tell which way's up, down, left, right, kind of halfway left, kind of halfway right, up, northeast, southwest. You can't tell, because you're just out. And the other room might be upside down to mess with you, so you could learn how to fight in zero gravity, or you might be upside down compared to them. You're listening to the Voice America Kids Network. I'm Christopher Froelich here. Our topic today is books, and I'm currently talking about Ender's Game, and I probably just got through the good 4 or 5 chapters in of the book summary, and I'm going to continue on. Here we go. So the Battle School Brass soon promotes Ender to command of a new army in the school's Zero Gravity War Game League. Battle School Brass, one of the leaders, promotes Ender to command a new army in the school's Zero Gravity War Game League. He molds his young soldiers into undefeated teams, despite working with an inexperienced army. Ender's army implements innovative tactics abolishing old methods. They're called the Dragon Army. Now, when you go through the book, spoiler alert, that's how much I love this book. I will spoil it, I'm sorry. So as I'm saying, Ender has gone through many, many, many teams. And all of his team captains have hated him because he's so brilliant. He knows what he's doing, and people just don't want to listen to him. So while everyone else is fighting the war, and he's being set back because they don't want him to be better than him, they don't want him to show up to teams because there is actually a scoreboard, and these suits that they wear actually determine where you have been shot, if you're out, and they actually tighten up when you've been shot with those little... They have little beam lasers, and when the beam laser hits your target, your suit clams up like a piece of brick, and you can't use that body part as if being shot. So, and it also tells the scoreboard. So Ender just sits out in the front, and he just learns all these new tactics and how to do things, and he becomes one of the best leaders, and he takes this weird, really terrible army, and he turns it into one of the most magnificent, well-oiled machines that you could possibly make in military service out of nothing. Basically turns nothing into a Rolls Royce, really. That's a story for... Well, just read the book and you'll find out. But anyway, the Battle School Administration promotes Ender to the Command School, ahead of schedule. So the schools kind of go, you know, how you have your regular grade school, middle school, high school, college, right? Well, since Ender's so great, he actually passed through grade school. Didn't even have to go to kindergarten. Preschool, he went through middle school, and now right now he's in high school in his new battle kind of a school. Then he goes to command school. Command school is like your doctorate's degree. So he's basically almost even skipped college at this point. He's going almost, you have to be like 17, and he's going at like 12, 13 or whatever. It's just amazing for his talents, but I'm not surprised. In his command school, he's under the rule of a man named Mazer Rackham. Mazer Rackham is one of the, how you say, Alexander the Greats of the U.S. He helped defeat the buggers, sending them back, and trying to get them to go away. So he's a legendary hero of the Formac Wars. Ender plays a game very similar to the Battle Rooms, only he commands 3D spaceships. So now he's not in 3D he's not in a situation where he has to shoot people. Now he's just playing like a video game or whatever. Very similar to the Battle Room. He's subordinate officer or fellow students that he's met earlier, but he doesn't get to meet for a long, long time on this different planet earlier from the battle school. Each day, the game becomes increasingly grueling, and Ender is slowly worn down to exhaustion. Waking and sleeping blend together as Ender nearly loses his mind while still maintaining his military innovations as a leader. I would hate to do that. I love sleep, and I love to eat, so sleeping, walking wouldn't really work. I just gotta sleep, walk, and eat, so anyway. Ender's final exam consists of a scenario where the bugger ships outnumbers fleet 1,000 to 1, nearly a planetary mass. Ender's order uses a special weapon called the Molecular Disruption Device. Would love to use that in Halo, I'll tell you that. Against the planet itself, destroying the planet, simultaneous planet, and all of the ships in its orbit. Ender makes his decision knowing that this is an expressly against the respectable rules of the game, hoping that his teachers will find this a ruthless and unacceptable move from him from command and allow him to return home. So he basically just uses the thing and he thinks that he's cheating a game. He still thinks he's playing a game. So, yeah. Let's take a break. I'm Christopher Froelich, keeping it right here. You're listening to the Voice America Kids.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
The Terrence Rogers Show will take the world by storm. The topics are sometimes newsworthy, sometimes personal, as we explore fashion, entertainment, art, and more. Host Terrence Rogers has seen a lot of life experience in his few years of life. It's this experience that allows him to bring a fresh perspective to the table, and he holds nothing back. Tune in to The Terrence Rogers Show every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Kids channel. You'll laugh, cry, and most importantly, this show will reach out and touch your life.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network wherever you go. In addition to listening live, you can check out information about your favorite talk show hosts, discover new talk show personalities, add shows to your list of favorites, and listen to all our show archives on demand. All from your iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market, and get ready to tune in. The Voice America mobile app, powered by Aircast.
What is Take Two? Take two crazy hosts, put them in front of two microphones, and use your two ears to enjoy the fun. Times two. Take Two. We'll go back, way back to the favorite TV shows of our childhood. Your parents' childhood. No.
Try again, Chris. Take two.
We'll take you back to the favorite TV shows of our generation, past and present, and apply them to what's going on in our own lives. Trust us, it'll be a blast. Tune in to Take Two every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Kids channel. There is so much going on in the tech field. The Technology Show is here to sort it all out so that you know exactly what you need to get and what you should avoid. In this age of cell phones and text messaging and new discoveries every single day, you need to be informed. We'll bring you previews of new products, technology news, and help you make the right decision when you are out there buying that new MP3 player, cell phone, or mobile device. Don't do a thing until you've tuned in to The Technology Show, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, on Voice America Kids. What are some of the issues that kids face every day? You'll find out when you tune into the appropriately named Today's Kids. Your hosts are here to open the doors to a forum of all kinds of issues. Nothing is off the table here, and because it's on the Voice America Kids channel, you know you're getting a kid's perspective. Tune in every Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time for Today's Kids. Your hosts will lead this forum of engaging conversation on Voice America Kids.
Want to know what's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network host? How about what's new with our network? Make sure you check out the iRadio blog, a look at what's hot at Voice America and beyond. Visit www.iradioblog.com today. Get the inside scoop on every channel on our network, including breaking news, featured guests, blog posts from our hosts, and much more. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter for even more inside action. Visit iradioblog.com today and stay connected.
We didn't invent Kid Talk, we perfected it, and at a very young age. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
Put that book down and listen. You're tuned in to Bookworm on Voice America Kids. Now back to our show.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Welcome to the program, Bookworm on Voice America Kids Network. I'm Christopher Froelich. Our topic today is books. Now, rounding out our four books is another great science fiction novel, House of the Scorpion. As previously before discussed, I talked about the other four books, Ender's Shadow by Orson Scott Card, Ender's Game by the same author, Orson Scott Card, and Relic by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. Three fantastic books that you should definitely invest in the time of reading. But anyway, as I was saying, this book, House of the Scorpion, is another fantastic novel written by Nancy Farmer about a young clone who is being raised by a drug lord named El Patron in this story about the struggle to survive as a free individual. The story takes place in a country called Opium. Yes, country called Opium, you know, like the drug. So, the drug lord, Opium. Correlates, you know? A strip of land between Mexico, now called Aztlan, not really, guys, it's not a real thing, science fiction, yeah, and the U.S. Opium, which is essentially an opium-producing state, is ruled by Mateo Alcrain, also known as El Patron. El Patron workforce consists of illegal immigrants whom the farm patrol or ex-criminals. Yeah, so this is how they do it, which I found really amazing, which actually kind of correlates to what I've been learning about in history lately. In history, I learned about this whole thing how, you know, the beginning of the colonies and everything like that, where we were first getting our country together and we only had 13 original colonies, that the British actually, right after the Revolutionary War, started stealing our sailors. Yeah, they used to start stealing our sailors and actually force them into our army. And threaten them with things like, we'll kill you, or obviously they're going to blow up the ship if you don't do it. And we just got really annoyed, but we didn't stop it. We didn't even do anything about it. So this is kind of like how that's happening. The U.S. has illegal immigrants either going to Mexico or from Mexico, and which is obviously illegal, and you can definitely get penalized for that. But this guy literally goes up to them, these ex-criminals or people who are just trying to get over the border, and tells them, oh, I'll give you safe refuge, or, oh, yeah, no, yeah, you need somewhere to stay? Come stay with me. And while they're sleeping, this guy sends other people out and puts little microchips in their brain. They are then called Egits, which is another kind of like, you know, the bugger's turn. If you've listened to the previous one, you'd understand. But Egits are people who don't have minds of their own because that microchip controls them. It gives them no more will to live, no more will to fight back, or any will at all, really. They just do what they're told. They've actually been able to do this. If you don't get the Egits, not being able to do this, but if they can get the Egits to just keep working. Like sometimes they forget to get the Egypt to go back inside. So be like, oh, go work. Okay, 6 hours later. Okay, come back inside for dinner or breakfast or whatever. And if they don't, not everyone hears that bell or that ring or whatever that makes them want to come back, like gives it that chip, oh, send that pulse signal to the brain that says he has to go back inside. They will actually keep working until they drop dead, which happens very consistently throughout the novel, which the main character, Matt, who's a clone of El Patron, it talks about. So he describes it beautifully. This is a fantastic novel that you should definitely read. El Patron clones himself so he can take Matt's organs. Yeah, so this is one of those, he's a little messed up in the head, guys. Organs as his own organs if they fail. This guy's like 120. He's been doing this for years. He's been making clones, then puts the organs back in himself. Basically, he's just like the Million Dollar Man, only organic Million Dollar Man. Mateo was treated cruelly by most of the Ukrainians as a clone. Clones aren't respected among society whatsoever. He is forbidden to leave the area and is kept ignorant, and he is a clone. His cruel joke reveals his status. Matt is given a bodyguard, Tamlin, who becomes the father figure to him. So that kind of skips a little bit, but what really happens is that Matt's in a little shed, and there's the cook. The cook takes care of him. He's basically secretly under wrap, and no one knows about him, and they don't really talk about him. I mean, why would you want to say, oh, I have a clone, hey, what's up? It's not really cool stuff, and the guy just kind of doesn't really care. He's got bigger fish to fry. He's got to go kill people or do drugs or whatever like this. Parents out there, you're hearing me say, if you're listening with your kids right now, drugs and drug lord cloning and bad stuff like that, don't worry about it. I went to a school. This was actually one of the summer readings for my freshman year at school. So don't have any concern with like the profanity or death, violence, or whatever. It's an eye-opener kind of a book. So as I was saying, so he has to stay with the cook, and they don't want him to be shown to anyone. And when he's staying with the cook, all of a sudden he actually gets outside, and he gets a cut on his arm. They take him inside, and they treat his wounds, and he's just like, he's in a daze because he's lost a lot of blood, and he hasn't eaten, whatever, like that. And they find out that he's the clone, but they treat him like just absolute dirt. Just dirt. They fix his wounds, and they're just kind of like, oh, he's a clone. Oh, all right, well, let's just keep him in a pigsty then. So literally, they put him in, like, this room where they put hay everywhere. Hay, just hay all over the floor, and just be like, all right, do what you gotta do, and we'll feed you maybe, like, every other week. Not every other week, every other day. And he lives there for a while until they find out that he's not, and then he's giving a bodyguard so no one can ever treat him cruelly like that ever again. So he goes through life trying to, well, in the beginning, he goes through like that. But, you know, you're listening to the Voice America Kids Network. I'm Christopher Froelich here, and our topic today is, basically, I'm rounding up the four books in another great science fiction novel, House of the Scorpion. This is the Bookworm Show. Thanks for listening to the Bookworm Show. It's a great, just great show. But anyway, as I was saying before, after a near fatal heart attack, El Patron requires the transplant from Matt. So those of you who just, like, tuned in right here, I've been talking about how Matt, the main character, is a clone. He's then found out he's a clone of the drug lord, and this drug lord always uses the organs to... uses his clone's organs, fully developed organs, to replace his own. So this guy's, like, 135, and he keeps replacing his own organs. Like, oh, I've been drinking too much, and my liver's messed up. All right, make a clone, let him live for about 5 years, take his liver out, and put that stuff inside me, let the liver grow, and then I'll just replace it with another clone. He's got so much money, he can just waste clones. So, after a near-fatal heart attack, El Patron requires a transplant from Matt, but is foiled by Cecilia, the household cook and Matt's caregiver. She actually loves the clone, Cecilia, which is the cook and caregiver. I think she poisons El Patron. So El Patron dies, leaving Matt still alive and no longer any use to the Ukrainians, the drug lord family. Matt tries to escape the mansion in ensuing chaos with the help of Marie, a young member of the Mezdoza family. Another family who are kind of friends, but like one of those friends like, oh, hey, what's up? They don't really like them, but they kind of have to like them because their father, or El Patron, is in business with them, so they kind of have to. Chaos with them, helping Marie, a young little, he falls in love with her, basically, but the plan fails, and Marie is taken away. Tamlin pretends to betray Matt, but instead sets him on a path to Aslan, that is a freer nation. Arriving in Aslan, Matt comes across a penal colony of orphans. These orphans are called the Lost Boys. Sounds familiar? And Matt is sent to live with them by a group of men known as the Keepers, who follow the philosophies of Marxism. The Keepers operate a plankton farmers forcing an offer to orphans to do manual labor and subsist to plankton. So they basically live on this farm, do work, they get food from everything like that, just by just getting plankton to survive, and they scrub the tanks of plankton, or they feed the plankton and stuff like that. But anyway, the Keepers enjoy luxuries, quarters, and delectable foods, claiming to this far because they earn the right to do so by working hard in their childhood. Matt is the first of the outcasts because the other boys think that he is a spoiled aristocrat. However, Matt becomes a hero when he defies the Keepers and leads the boys into a rebellion against them. After liberating the Lost Boys, Matt manages to find Marie and her mother, the political powerful Enzprenzas. For Enzprenzas, Matt learns that the opium is in a lockdown. No one can enter or leave the country. Only El Patron's DNA can to deactivate the border security. Matt, with the help of Marie and Enzprenza, hatch a plan to circumvent the border security to open opium and unlock the secrets of the past with a new hope for the future. So, Matt's kind of awesome. Kind of like an Ender's Game. Basically... this segment it's been me, Christopher Froelich, on Bookworm. We just talked about four books. We talked about Relic by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child, Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card, and Ender's Shadow by Orson Scott Card as well. As previously talked about, the House of the Scorpion. So four fantastic science fiction novels, and you should really start getting listening to them. Thanks for listening to Bookworm Show. I'm Christopher Froelich. Keep it right here. You're listening to Voice America Kids, and have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Bookworm on the Voice America Kids channel. We'll be here at the same time next week, so be sure to tune in. Now, how many books do you think you can get through before our next show?
You're listening to Voice America Kids.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.